takes all kinds of men to make a Navy. Pharmacist mates, storekeepers, bosun mates, radar men, engineers, and ordinary seamen. Takes all kinds of equipment to make a Navy. Steering gear, ropes, and lines, and hawsers, davits, and anchors, and guns, and radios, and ammunition. Takes all kinds of ships to make a Navy. Submarines, destroyers, aircraft carriers, auxiliary vessels, and battle wagons. And also to make a Navy, it takes a ship like this. A great white ship with a broad green stripe and a red cross on her side. A ship whose equipment consists of operating rooms, sterile gowns, surgical instruments, and bandages. And believe it or not, women on a Navy ship.
The Armed Forces Radio Service, the voice of information and education, presents The Great White Ship, starring Selina Royal. Thousands of sailors wounded in sea battles and Marines maimed by warfare on land are today living tributes to the skill and efficiency of the men and women who served aboard the unescorted and brightly lighted hospital ships that have sailed with the American fleet ever since the Spanish-American War. This story, then, is respectfully dedicated to those who were served and to those who served on one of our great white ships.
Twenty years is a long time in any man's Navy, and it's just as long for a woman. 20 years as a nurse. Now, I've seen a lot of things happen in that time. Been on a lot of ships, taken care of a lot of boys. Yes, there's more to sending a hospital to sea than just hauling some beds and doctors and nurses aboard ship. Sometimes, for instance, you take a liner that used to run from New York to Miami with a load of tourists. You put in almost 500 beds in 6 wards, 2 completely equipped operating rooms, clinical laboratories, x-ray department, eye, ear, nose, and throat, physiotherapy, pharmacy refrigerators with serums and antitoxins and blood plasma. And when you commission the ship, you give her a name that means to give comfort in grief or misfortune. Yes, you call your hospital ship the Solace. Captain Benjamin Perlman was the commanding officer of the Solace when I reported aboard as chief nurse in 1941.
Sincerely hope that our voyage will be a pleasant one. We're joining the Pacific Fleet at Pearl Harbor by way of the Panama Canal.
When will the others be aboard, sir?
The line officers and crew are complete now, and the senior medical officer will be Captain Harold Jensen, and his staff of doctors report tomorrow. The hospital apprentices and pharmacist mates are due on Friday, and your nurses Saturday.
Saturday fine, sir.
Our orders are to shove off 1 week from today.
Very good, sir. My nurses will be ready. I looked them over as they came aboard that week. 12 girls. 12 nurses that would work together for all the time we were operating with the fleet. Different backgrounds, different tastes, different looks. But all of them making the same mental promise. To return every sailor taken ill or injured, in or out of battle, to his family, and as near to perfect health as medical science and unlimited hospital resources could guarantee. I had to know those girls. They were my responsibility. So I watched them as they began their work aboard the Solace. There was Ensign Hilda Smith from Minnesota.
Sure, it's hard work in the nurses' corps, but it's good work, and I'm used to it. I used to dream about getting in when I was back on the farm. I used to play nurse from the time I was a little girl. Fixing a bird's wing, taking thorns out of the horse's hooves, things like that.
And Ensign Tasker, a former socialite from New York.
I sometimes went down to the poorer sections, not nosing around just to see how the other half lived, but because they really needed help. They had bad living conditions, not even enough food, and they suffered badly from lack of medical attention. That's what really started me out thinking about...
And Ensign Catherine Shaw, who was undoubtedly from the Deep South.
Never felt like I was really accomplishing anything till I started in training. Now it seems like I've been a nurse all my life. Like there wasn't anything important happened to me before I filled out that blank form and got accepted and began taking care of others.
And Ensign Mary Stevens from the Middle West.
Father was a doctor, and almost my first memory was the smell of disinfectant and ether and the sight of pills and bottles and stethoscopes. Everybody just seemed to take it for granted that I'd be a boy. And when I wasn't, there was only one thing for me to do. Besides, I like it. After this is over, I might even go ahead to medical school.
Those were to be my girls, my nurses on board the Solace. You couldn't tell much from the first few days, but as we began work at Pearl Harbor, they soon got into the swing of things. It was easy work, a few cases of the mumps, a sailor with a ruptured appendix, some severe sunburns, an eye examination. The simple tasks of keeping up the health of a fleet. Yes, it was an easy job, until... December 7th, 1941, Pearl Harbor. Standing on the deck while we watched the Japs blast our fleet to pieces, seeing the Arizona and the Utah, the Oklahoma, the destroyers, it was terrible to watch it and not be able to do anything. But it wasn't long before we could do something, and we had to. Even before the invaders were gone from the skies, the casualties began to be loaded aboard the Solace. Captain Jensen stood at the rail to examine the tags on the wounded men as they were lifted up in the Stokes stretchers.
Shell splinters in the back and side. Put him in surgical one lower.
Yes, sir.
Where does it hurt, son?
My chest feels empty, like nothing's there.
Surgical one lower.
Yes, sir.
How's medical one?
Room for two more, sir.
These two, then. Medical one.
Yes, sir.
All medical Sunday, one. And the next day and the next, until the faces became blurred, and all you could see were the wounds and the eyes filled with suffering. It was a new thing for my nurses, being part of the Navy when it was at war. But they learned fast, and they learned it the hard way. That was December of 41, and Christmas was coming. None of the nurses or doctors or anybody on the Solace had much sleep or peace of mind then. But in spite of the weariness, all of us were thinking of the Navy tradition that a tree rides the mast on Christmas. And we managed to collect four scraggy cedars in Honolulu, together with enough tinsel, holly, decorations, and toys, and knickknacks, so that every man aboard the Solace would have a gift and a celebration. And on Christmas Eve, the nurses' quarters were bustling with preparations.
But we haven't got the one thing we need most.
What's that?
Well, a Santa Claus. They'll be expecting one.
Get the yeoman who stands with the commander at quarters.
He's perfect. Big and fat and jolly. I'll bet he's a southerner.
Great. He's the boy. Someone go get him. And the sailmaker can fix a suit out of this bunting.
And a beard out of some rope. That should do it.
How about the trees?
Well, we put one on the mast, another on the quarterdeck, and two in the mess hall. That'll have to do. The up patients help with the trimmings and the wards.
We'll make it a real Christmas yet. Are all the presents wrapped?
Almost. We've managed at least one gift for each patient and a little smidgen of candy. Here's the last one. This little mechanical ballet dancer.
Not much of a gift, is it?
Oh, I'd like to have that for Swenson in Ward B. He's blind. He's got to have something he can feel. He could wind her up and feel her dance.
Oh, no. Give me that one. Look, I've got a machinist mate down there. He's old and very critical. He's got kids at home. This is a sort of silly present he'd bring home for them on Christmas. Maybe it's his last. Maybe it'd bring them closer.
The girls were beautiful that evening, I thought. And our Santa Claus was bigger and jollier than any department stores. I remembered a pharmacist maid who played a sweet accordion, and he got six fellows who could sing to handle the carols for us. We started our small procession through the wards and around the deck, and from out of nowhere came Captain Perlman and said,
I'm with you on this if you can use the bass.
War and Christmas seemed suddenly incongruous. Only yesterday, these kids were sneaking down the stairs to watch their mothers and dads place the last glimmering icicle on the tree. Pain now made the young faces seem mature, but even eyes that had been almost lifeless brightened miraculously as the nurses distributed their presents and Santa Claus his bounty. That was Christmas in 1941. We knew we had done a good job on the Solace in taking care of those Pearl Harbor casualties, and the Commander-in-Chief of the Pacific Fleet, Admiral Nimitz, presented us with a citation that read in part,
displayed conspicuous devotion in the line of duty. Its ability to cope with this disaster was responsible for the successful care of all casualties and the saving of many lives. The professional skill displayed and distinguished service rendered by this hospital ship were in keeping with the highest traditions of naval service.
Well, we were in it then. The Salus was the only hospital ship in the Pacific Theater at that time, and we carried a heavy burden. Just 3 months after Pearl Harbor, Captain Perlman was ordered to proceed to Samoa, then to Pango Pango, Thongathibaud, Ifate, and Nimoa. Glamorous names, you say? Tropical islands of romance? Not for us. Again, we saw the awful backwash of war, the casualties from the Battle of the Coral Sea, the Solomon Campaign, Guadalcanal. We evacuated casualties to New Zealand and Australia, to land hospitals, where they could regain their health. One day I was walking down the passageway in the nurses' quarters, and I heard two of my girls talking. Kay, the nurse from New York, and Mary from the Middle West.
They're so brave, all of them. They thank you for nothing. A kind word, a smile, a cigarette, anything.
That Marine in Ward 4, I can't stop thinking about him. The way his eyes would light up when I came around. Just his eyes. That's all I could see through the bandages.
Yes. Some of them live and you don't know why. And others die and you don't know the answer for that either.
I never knew anything like this before. It's almost a year now. A year of those men. All of them suffering and hurt and crying. Some of them...
Well, what do you want them to do? Stand up and sing Anchors Away?
That's right. Make a joke of it.
Oh, come off it, Mary.
Sometimes I think I can't stand it anymore. Some of them just lie there and look at you. And you know that inside they feel so much pain that there isn't anything that you...
Captain.
Oh, we didn't see you there, Commander.
I'd like to talk to Mary for a minute, if you don't mind, Kay.
Oh, certainly. I have to go on duty in my ward now, anyhow.
Mary, look at me.
Yes, Commander?
I've been noticing a change in you during the past few weeks. Have you been feeling well?
Yes, I feel all right. It's just...
I overheard your conversation just now. It's not the sort of thing a Navy nurse should discuss.
What do you mean?
Well, this is a hard life, Mary. It's no fun being a nurse on a hospital ship. Nursing is difficult even under ordinary conditions in a good land hospital. That's why it's so important that we do our jobs.
But I don't understand...
A Navy nurse is the only woman ever assigned to a ship. Now, there's a reason for that. These men that we take care of are helped more than we know by the sight of a nurse at their beds, the feel of her hand when they're sick or wounded. Mary, you have to smile no matter what your heart feels like. Settle your differences in your own room and the loser come out with a smile. And never talk shop. That's the hardest and the most important. When you're doing your job, do it. But in nurses' quarters, don't discuss it. If you do, you'll go stale or emotional, and the men will pay for it.
I see. I'm sorry, Commander.
Well, we'll say no more about it. Now, come on, there's work to be done. And get that smile on your face. Commander Waters relieved Captain Perlman as our skipper on the Sullis in 1943, and we received the first orders ever given a U.S. Navy hospital ship to enter a combat region for evacuation of casualties. That was the beginning of a new page in the annals of Navy doctors at war, an historic event that took us to such places as Apamama Atoll, Tarawa, Kwajalein, and Eniwetok. There we were, a lovely, white, unarmed ship, darting in and out among the beaches and transport areas on our errand of mercy. They came near us, just small boats that brought their wounded alongside and then slipped away. And as we sped across the seas toward base hospitals at Pearl Harbor or Australia, I used to walk through the wards on my rounds and listen to the men talking. These men who had been in the middle of headline-making battles just a few hours before and whose wounds were still fresh and raw.
No kidding. You never saw the ocean till you came out? Brother, I was born with my feet in the water. I used to wonder what a mountain was. I'd say, hey, what's this mountain business? Where I come from, we got
Listen,
water.
You know what I wish I had? A horse. I got a horse back home. He's really my brother's, but I'm the one he goes for. Boy, could he buck. You know, I remember the last time my brother tried him. He says, Well, guess I'll take him out.
And the next time I look, there he sat with a busted rib.
Nurse, can I have a cigarette?
Here you are. I'll light it for you.
You don't want a girl that likes to read.
Well, what do you mean?
I got a girl, but she don't like to read. I mean, she can read her. She can let it alone. I never was much in all this mind stuff for a woman. I say, let a girl be herself. All right, if she likes to read, let her read. My girl back home don't like to read.
Please, please, is there a nurse here?
Here, sailor.
I'm thirsty. Could I have some water?
Sorry. Wait till that wound heals. Then you can have all the water you can drink.
All right. Just thought I'd ask. Thanks.
You know my favorite cake is, miss? Angel cake. Back home, we used to have it Sundays with chocolate ice cream on top. Mom made the ice cream herself.
Not much talk of wounds or war in a hospital ship. These sailors and Marines were just kids who were literally in the same boat. They talked about the things that meant the most to them, women and families and girls. And while their faces changed, still the conversation was the same. The conversation of the 1,300 casualties we evacuated from Saipan. The 1,000 boys we took out of the rest of the Marianas. The Marine and Army personnel we treated for wounds received on Guam and Anger and Peleliu. Commander Edward Peterson was the skipper of the Solace then, and we were getting an object lesson in the dangers that a hospital ship is exposed to from air attack while stationed in a transport area off the enemy's shores. And it was just 3 months after that, when the Solace was with the 3rd and 5th Fleets at Ulithi, that Commander Peterson held a staff meeting.
Not often that a hospital ship is required for such duty. For that reason, I want both the line officers and the medical personnel to understand the dangers of this assignment. Captain Hall, your doctors and nurses have done a fine job throughout our campaigns.
Thank you, sir.
While the Solace has been here at Ulithi, you've been overworked. Your facility's taxed to the utmost.
Yes, that's true, but I'll confess we'd rather be in a more active region, Captain.
Well, it's my pleasure to inform all of you, line officers and medics alike, that the Solace has been ordered to resume her most familiar role. Gentlemen, we're going back into the combat area to hit the beaches with the Marines.
D-Day plus 4. A cold gray morning on Iwo Jima. The battle should have been over, but in reality it was only beginning. We maneuvered inside a line of battleships, cruisers, destroyers, carriers, transports, and a host of smaller craft, to an anchorage within several hundred yards of black, littered beach. The gangway was ordered down and our signal flag run up to announce our readiness to receive casualties. I stood beside Commander Beck, who was the embarkation officer, as they began to be loaded aboard.
Phenomenal wound here. Immediate surgery. Surgical, one lower. Now, how does it feel, son?
Okay. Is Miss McDonald still aboard?
Yes, Nurse McDonald is here.
Well, take me back to her old ward. She fixed me up good at Saipan, and I need more of the same treatment.
That's Ward 3, sir.
All right, son, you're earmarked for Ward 3.
Well, thanks, Doc. She'll fix it for me.
Easy with that stretcher there.
He takes them in order. Abdominal wounds, brain and chest operations, amputations. From the deck, we can see Iwo, the impenetrable blockhouses which no artillery or bombing could knock out. The 1,000-pound rockets and huge mortar shells. The lack of vegetation for cover. The raw, bitter cold. Those are the things that are causing men to be brought aboard now with ugly wounds. They lie on the deck waiting for one of our 17 doctors to operate on them when a table is available. The corpsmen walk among the stretchers, giving morphine, blood transfusions, penicillin injections, and sulfur tablets, marking their tags. And you hear the conversations of these wounded men.
Hey, did you hear how the 4th's coming out?
Okay. They'll make it. Okay.
Were the 27th Marines relieved?
Not yet.
That was my outfit. The going's still rough. Well, is he still bad on the beach? How about your platoon leader?
Oh, he got it going up the hill right in front of me. Same shell got us both.
They got me on my birthday. Oh, sons. They couldn't shoot me yesterday. They couldn't shoot me tomorrow. Oh, they had to shoot me today, my 21st birthday.
And then two of the corpsmen started to lift a stretcher to carry a Marine down to surgery. His head covered with blood-stained bandages. And he half rose and sang out,
Hey, Bud, wait a minute. Take a look at that.
In the distance, we could see tiny figures struggling up Mount Suribachi, the extinct volcano that Japs had converted into one giant pillbox. And then suddenly we saw it. An American flag on the peak, snapping in the wind. And the Marine said simply,
"Quite a sight, ain't it? I helped put her there this morning."
That night, we moved several miles out to sea after loading a record of more than 400 patients. This was to prevent our bright lights from making a target in the midst of the combat ships. All during the dark hours, our doctors and nurses labored to save the lives of those aboard. One ward of 68 wounded used 4,250,000 units of penicillin that night. Six of the Marines died, but the rest were still clinging to life by morning. Back we went to the beaches for still more wounded. On that second day, the ship smelled of blood, disinfectants, gangrene, and death. We were carrying 640 patients, more than ever before in 13 trips, covering every marine amphibious action from Tarawa to Peleliu. The less seriously wounded men were put on cots on the promenade decks, and the ship's crew gave up their quarters to sleep on deck so that their bunks might be used. We took that shipload to bases at Guam and Saipan and came back for two more evacuation trips. The Solace was earning her name in many ways. We were giving comfort in grief or misfortune to over 2,000 patients during the Iwo campaign.
July 6, 1906, Geneva, Switzerland, the Geneva Convention. Medical and administrative staffs and chaplains are respected and protected under all circumstances.
1899, The Hague, Switzerland. Articles of the Hague War Regulations. Hospital ships are inviolable as well as the religious, medical, or hospital staff of any captured ship.
These are the laws of war. Now here is April 1st, 1945, the island of Okinawa, and the policy of the Japanese kamikaze.
Look up there. That plane is peeling off.
It's making a run on us. Can't he see our lights? Doesn't he know this is a hospital ship?
Oh, he can't miss them. It's a kamikaze. Sound general quarters.
Whoa, what? We have no weapons, no protection. Just sit here and pray he misses.
Contrary to every agreement of civilized nations, the Solace was deliberately attacked. The bomb just missed its mark, but the incident was an example of things to come. And Captain Peterson was forced to a decision.
Gentlemen, I've just received word that another hospital ship, the Comfort, was attacked in the same manner as we. Therefore, I have no alternative but to give orders contrary to the Geneva Agreement, since the enemy has decided to wage uncivilized warfare.
But, sir, we have no weapons aboard, not even sidearms. What can we do?
Hereafter, the Solace will sail without the normal illumination. We will black out at night. They're evidently using our lights for targets, gentlemen, so there's no other way. In addition, we'll have a destroyer escort for protection against these attacks.
I guess it's the only solution.
These suicide-bound kamikazes are making a top on every ship in the area. We've had more burn cases here than at any time since Pearl Harbor.
The Solace is getting a higher number of personnel from ships than from the ranks of the assault troops.
Gentlemen, that's it. You keep them from dying, and I'll try to keep them afloat.
Well, that was Okinawa from a hospital ship. We made seven trips with more than 4,000 casualties, passed out 136,000 sulfur tablets, 3,000 units of blood, and 2 billion units of penicillin. All the personnel of the Solace worked on a round-the-clock schedule, catching a wink of sleep only when they were ready to drop from exhaustion. Yes, that was Okinawa from a hospital ship. But the war didn't end for us with the signing of a surrender document in Tokyo Bay. Along with the other Navy hospital ships, the Relief, the Samaritan, the Refuge, the Bountiful, and the brand new Tranquility, we were assigned to magic carpet duty. Made six round trips between Pearl Harbor and San Francisco to transport the wounded men, the war-weary veterans of bitter Pacific campaigns. And it was always interesting to me to see what the attitude of our personnel was toward the great white ship. Like the doctor who had been a famous Long Island psychiatrist.
Hardly a neurotic in a boatload. That's what I like. Practicing good, simple, direct medicine on good, simple, direct men with plenty of guts.
Well, the pharmacist mate who told me he really wanted to be on a destroyer or battleship, but...
Honest, Commander, there's something about this. I don't know. You can actually see the guys getting well under your hands.
Or Mary Smith, the girl that I once had to tell not to get too emotional over what she saw.
And I got the sweetest letter from him the other day. He's all well now, and when we get to San Francisco, he's going to meet me. I guess I've really been looking for someone like that sailor all my life.
It's not unusual for a Navy nurse to resign her commission in order to marry a sailor or officer she's helped back to health. Of course, it hasn't happened to me in 20 years, but maybe I'm just the chief nurse type. I was sorry to leave the Solace. Sorry when she was decommissioned and turned over to the War Surplus Administration for disposal. Didn't seem right for a ship that had evacuated and treated more battle casualties than any other in the history of military medicine, with a mortality rate lower than one would generally expect at a modern hospital in the States. 25,000 of them we had. 25,000 boys who had been admitted and treated and nursed until they were well. As I said before, it takes all kinds of equipment and all kinds of ships and all kinds of men to make a Navy. And those boys would tell you about the great white ship with a broad green stripe and a red cross on her side. A ship whose equipment consists of operating rooms, sterile gowns, surgical instruments and bandages, and a guarantee of the best medical care in the world, everywhere in the world, for every American sailor.
Been listening to The Great White Ship, starring Selina Royal. Our story was written by Robert C. Benson, produced and directed by Will Scott. In the cast were Martha Shaw, Julie Bennett, Beth Lehman, Lynn Allen, Paul McVeigh, Noel Rayburn, Bud Whittam, Clayton Post, Kyle Thomas, John Postini, Dawes Butler, Lloyd Jenkins, Tom McKee, and Don Diamond. The music was composed by Michel Perrier and John Hicks, with musical direction by Mr. Perrier. The chorus was under the direction of Roger Wagner. This is Gil Warren speaking. This is the United States Armed Forces Radio Service, the voice of information and education.